Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social.
Bro, with the long airborne clear, knocked down Grimaldi inside the zone. Here's Bonino, a shot, and the score! Grimaldi knocked that puck down and set it up for Nick Bonino. 1-0 Nashville. Looked up in the air and a quick shot. In front, the rebound, and the backhander put in by Ryan Johansson. Johansson crashes the net, and the Predators lead 2-0. Here's the stage for Daniel Carr. The game on his stick. He can end it here in a Predators victory. Carries it in down the left wing side. Carr hesitates. He scores! Daniel Carr gives the Predators a shootout win over St. Louis.
After one of the worst stretches of hockey in Nashville Predators modern, 3-5 years history, two of the better games you will see this organization play. Welcome to the show, Morning Drive, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Marquise Munson hanging out here on a Tuesday. Happy Thanksgiving week. Can I say that now, guys? Am I allowed to say that? Happy Thanksgiving? Can I say that?
It's
my favorite holiday. I don't know where your guys' favorite holiday is, but it's my favorite holiday. So happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Yeah. Happy Thanksgiving to the Preds.
There you go. They gave a thanks whooping to you like that, huh? St. Louis the last two games. But I mean,
is that like jerk chicken?
Kind of, sort of. Yeah, turkey? A little spicy, a little overcooked, but good. What I was impressed by with the Predators last night,
3-2 win over St. Louis,
3-2 overtime shootout. They had their chances in Overton, the actual overtime, away the game. They had a bunch of chances. They kept it on the Blues end of the ice, it seemed like, for the majority of the overtime.
That was exciting.
They made some great saves, some saves that looked like great saves, but end up at the further review, they hit off the guy's stick twice. But Soros was there. And had it not, I probably wouldn't win it anyway.
Yeah, one of the greatest saves you'll see all season from UC Soros.
But this team, I mean, they recognize the problem, and they are working to fix the problem. Now, in working to fix the problem, it might, take away some of their offense. As we see, maybe it's because Arvidsson wasn't there last night. It kind of took away a little bit of the juice and offensive firepower. But still, this team... And we talked about this. If you concentrate on one end of the ice, does it affect the other end? Well, the last two games it has. And I don't expect anything other than that, because you can't play this. It's not like football where there are 11 guys, different guys on defense than it is offense. These guys got to play offense and defense. So if you're putting so much energy toward the defensive end, it's going to take its toll on the offensive end. And they have done exactly what they have been wanting to do all season. Now, it might take away from what they do offensively, but it doesn't matter. If they're winning games 2-1, 3-2, then, hey, I can have two less goals per game if it means a win.
And you're playing against the division leader and defending Stanley Cup champs and, budding rival after these two games. I mean, a playoff series a couple of years ago that obviously was extremely physical and ended up leading to the Predators making a run to the Stanley Cup. And that's how you start to build a rivalry, is two hockey teams playing in the postseason. But these two games felt like playoff games.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday night felt like a playoff game. Last night felt like a playoff game. And the Preds came away with 4 points after one of the worst stretches of hockey we have seen under Peter Laviolette in the recent, 2, 3, 4 years, whatever you want to call it. One of the worst stretches of hockey. Defensively, goaltending, penalty kill was absolutely atrocious. They are dead last in the NHL in penalty kill right now. Thank you, Vancouver Canucks. And to see them then turn it on its head and play the way they did. And most importantly for me in the two wins, and trust me, there is major drama right now with this lineup. and the coaching staff and the general manager. I think it's all tied up together. We got a soap opera for you coming up next segment. But and as to why this roster and this lineup looks the way it looks right now. But either way, they picked up 4 points after a terrible losing streak against the number one team in the division and the defending champs in two very physical hockey games. Now, I still watched the montage last night of the physicality, and it looked like a lot of Blues hits. It didn't look like a lot of Predators making hits. And even Crispy, I think, was like, oh, that montage looked a little one-sided there. There's a lot of Blues players knocking Predators around. So there still is an element of...
That's not them.
Right, and I think that's a fair concern to have for this team moving forward. It is going to be St. Louis wants to play not dirty, not chippy, but just they're going to play heavy hockey. They're going to knock you around and push you and test you and give you little elbows here and knock Grimaldi into the boards when they want to. They're going to do those things because that's what happens in the postseason. It's how they won a cup, and so the Predators are going to have to learn how to play those games because it's not them, to your point. Mm-hmm. But you got 4 points. It's a great way to sort of reset yourself and pick up 4 critical points and do it in the division and do it against a team that is at the top of the standings, and you feel pretty good about it. Number one for me, good starts. They have been terrible in the first period all season. They have scored now, 5 goals mm-hmm. in the first period of the last 2 games against St. Louis, and then the defense, it held up.
Yeah, it did. They did exactly what they wanted to do. They had some great puck movement yesterday that I saw, and it just seemed like they was fluent in what they were doing. So kudos to the Preds for kind of working themselves out of this slump. And hopefully this can be the start to something. Now, you know, I don't expect them to go on a, 15-game win streak or anything like that. It would be great if they did. But what I am expecting...
Are you calling for a 15-game winning streak?
Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't? What I am expecting is them to go out there and just play sound defense and then kind of letting the puck slide where it may and kind of go from there. But... yesterday, they had really good puck movement. The defense, for the most part, was sound. They had a lapse there. I think it might have been the second goal. You can say both goals were lapses, but there was one where, the puck just stayed in their end. And, they had a little blunder there here and there. But for the most part, they were doing exactly what they set out to do, and that's to play tough defense. Now, this team I don't think this team can ever be a truly physical team, but I don't think your defense is measured in physicality. I think defense is all about being where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there and paying attention to detail and being responsible and accountable to the other guys on the ice with you. So will they ever be this physical team like the Blues? Maybe not, but if they do exactly what they're supposed to do on the ice, on the defensive end, then they'll be all right. People shouldn't panic, but you just don't want to see them go down that route again of giving up 7, 8 goals, 9 goals, and not playing the type of defense that this organization has been known to play.
Yeah, and again, we're going to get into the drama of what's going on right now because there is obviously major lineup drama with Peter Laviolette, the front office, Kyle Turris, all this stuff. We'll get to all of that. But more importantly, and honestly, actually more importantly, is 4 points in the standings after losing 8 out of 9 and 6 straight. You come back and you pick up 4 points, desperately needed 4 points, against a team that – you've sent a message to now. Let's be honest. Like St. Louis, they did not play poor hockey. They played poor out of the gate in both games. And Forsberg jumped on him on Saturday night, and then last night, Rocco Grimaldi catching that lob pass from Fabbro to turn and then find Bonino, and then Bonino buries the shot to go up 1-0. That's setting a tone early. And then Johansson finds the loose puck in the slot. They've gone to the net each of the last 2 games a lot better. They've created more pressure in front of the net. And in large part, this leads into our conversation about the lineup because it feels like Peter Laviolette has gone to a larger, more physical group with Matthew Olivier And then they call up Daniel Carr, who plays on the second line last night, who ends up getting the game-winning goal in the shootout.
Yeah.
So adding,
good for him.
Adding intrigue to, you know, adding, you know.
I'm like, who is this Carr cat?
Yeah, adding interest to injury here, or whatever the phrase is. I can't even get my phrases right now.
Insult to injury.
Insult to injury, or whatever. I think it's the other side of that equation. But,
or injury to insult.
But Kyle Turris is benched. He's a healthy scratch again on the night that Victor Arvidsson is first missing from the lineup, and you don't go to the $6 million fourth or fifth highest paid player on the team who's sitting on the bench. You go to Daniel Carr instead. And the debate, there are many of them, and we'll get into this in the next segment, but it's hard to argue that it didn't pay off, because in the shootout, when you needed a goal to win the game, guess who was standing there with the puck on his stick? Daniel Carr, the guy who got called up instead of putting Kyle Turris in the lineup. He's the one making the big play in that spot. He was active around the net a couple of different times. He was willing to go into the dirty areas a few times, and I think that is what Peter Laviolette is looking for. He wants the jam, as he says. He wants the sandpaper, the grit, whatever you want to call it. This team is missing that. And that's why Daniel Carr was on the ice last night. It's why Matthew Olivier is part of this team. Matt Irwin got in a fight last night and landed a few. Mm-hmm. By the way, he landed a few right crosses to the body there.
To the gut.
In that fight. I thought he was pretty good in that fight. Give him credit for that.
I'm just looking at this because, you know, when the game started, first thing I did was, because we talked about it briefly off air yesterday, and we were going to talk about the whole Kyle Turris thing regardless, because when a guy like Arvidsson goes down, when Kyle hasn't been playing, do then, you know, Peter insert Kyle Turris into the lineup? And then if he does, how do we look after he's set for X amount of games? Will he come in and be effective, or will he not? So this was going to be something we were monitoring this really close, and then to look across and not see Kyle Turris,
yep.
You know, to me, it further feed into he's not going to be here. Come trade deadline, he is not. If he's played well enough, and it seems like it was a calculation. He played well enough to now say, we're going to put you down because we don't want it to get no worse. And if it gets better, then we might be, you know.
Or we're going to have a huge.
Exactly.
We're going to have a huge discussion, because I think.
Put him on the sideline and we are going. I would be surprised if he's not traded.
I agree with that. I think playing him is how you get him traded, though.
But he's played well.
Yeah. Well, this is so fascinating to me. I am obsessed with this because Peter Laviolette is doing this on purpose. And whether he likes it or not, he is the one creating the spotlight on this. He is the one that is pointing the big spotlight at Kyle Turris this entire time. I'm not saying it's not warranted or justified.
Exactly.
We'll discuss this when we return. What is going on with Kyle Turris? Why is Peter Laviolette handling it the way he's handling it? How much blame does David Poile get in all of this? There's a lot of questions about this. And in the meantime, Daniel Carr scores a game-winning goal in the shootout last night in a huge spot for the Predators to get 2 points at home. So there's a lot of moving parts to this. There's a lot of different discussions. We will try to explain them all when we return. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds win 3-2 last night in shootout after a thrilling overtime game against the St. Louis Blues. That is now two straight against St. Louis. They pick up 4 points, the Nashville Predators do, and end their losing streak with authority over the next two games. They'll play Vegas coming up on Wednesday evening at home, Bridgestone Arena, pregame 6, puck drop at 7. All right. Daniel Carr's in the lineup. Kyle Turris is not. Kyle Turris is one of the five or six top highest paid skater forwards on this entire roster at six years and $6 million per year contract. Given to him by David Poile, acquired in the trade prior to acquiring Matt Duchene. Now, of course, the media does its job by asking Peter Laviolette over and over and over again. He's been asked about this more than one game. Obviously, Kyle Turris has been scratched multiple times. And last night in particular, with Victor Arvidsson out, many people assuming Kyle Turris would finally be back in the lineup so that he can maybe redevelop his game, maybe redevelop some stock, maybe build up an opportunity for David Poile to trade him. This was after the game, and I believe this is Adam Vingan and Joe Rexrode asking questions in here. There might be somebody else in there as well. But this was his entire exchange last night after the game about why Kyle Turris is no longer playing, right now at least, for the Nashville Predators.
Peter, why does it seem that Kyle Turris has fallen out of favor with you?
I just made a lineup decision tonight, Adam.
If I may follow up on that, in the past week, the team has recalled two leagues. They've been putting the lineup over him, so I guess you can understand why it might be perceived that way.
I answered that question already.
Does he have a future?
Yeah, I mean, Kyle's part of our team.
That's not reassuring.
Okay.
It's really not.
All right, so let's try to lay all of this out.
Mm-hmm.
And it is fairly complicated. But if you just pretend like you don't know anything about any of this, and you were just dropped into this earth this morning, And I laid out all this information for you, and I gave you the scenario about Victor Arvidsson getting hurt and Kyle Turris's contract and how much he's getting paid and how he was acquired, what they gave up to get him, how, you know, Sam Girard, by the way, is a part of that contract or that trade, and you look at all the things, you just find out all the information, and you were dropped onto the earth out of space. You're an alien. Number one, you'd say Peter Laviolette clearly does not trust Kyle Turris. Number one. And if he doesn't, he's sending a message to Kyle Turris, which also feels that part of it feels irresponsible. So I'm not going to believe in that. I believe that Peter Laviolette doesn't feel like Kyle Turris gives his team a chance to win right now. He'd rather play other players right now. Olivier, Carr, whoever. Grimaldi last night was spectacular. So Peter Laviolette, by being so, I don't know what you'd call it, walled off, clandestine, which is fairly par for the course for him.
Mm-hmm.
By being this way, in my opinion, he is drawing far more attention to it, because now fans are desperately wanting to know about what Kyle Turris is doing wrong. Why is he not in the lineup? He's making $6 million a year. The media is doing its job by asking the questions, and you are making yourself and the situation sort of more of a, it's becoming a bigger story because of how you're handling it. So what is the goal for Peter Laviolette here? What is he trying to accomplish? Because you cannot trade Kyle Turris without Kyle Turris being on the ice, in my opinion.
Yeah, this is a baffling one. It truly is, because I think throughout the whole offseason, we were trying to figure out, well, is Kyle Turris going to be released? Is he going to be – well, he can't be released because the money they still owe him. Yeah. Will he be traded? What are they going to do with him? He goes and he has somewhat of a good offseason, and everybody's raving about him. He comes into the season, and he looks like the person that they acquired. He's starting to look like the guy they acquired 2 years ago. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's benched. They're not playing well defensively. They're giving up, you know, goals. They're not as physical. No one's standing in front of the net, yada, yada, yada. All of a sudden, he gets benched. And there's no reason other than to say, hey, we got to shake up the lineup a little bit. Things are not going well, you know. And Peter's known for, you know, switching lineups. So we, you know, when we first saw it, didn't think anything of it. But then, you know, things started to happen. Guys started to go down. And all of a sudden, you know, he's not caught up. He's not in a lineup. So what are we to think when you're not giving an explanation? You know, the old he's a part of this team.
Yeah.
Isn't reassuring.
Yeah, he's on the team. Yeah,
it isn't reassuring to anyone. Not that we need to be reassured, but it's not reassuring to Kyle. It's not. No, what I'm saying is not.
I think the fans deserve an answer when the third highest paid skater is not playing when
they're injured. You're absolutely right. But it's not reassuring to Kyle Turris that you know, like what? Okay, what is going on?
Kyle's not happy right now.
He might know the real reason. Lavi and Poyle know the real reason. But to not give an explanation other than, you know, he just went in the lineup and made a lineup. It makes this story bigger than what it should be.
Listen,
if you just come out and say, hey, listen, Kyle's not playing. He's not doing the things that we need him to do defensively.
Or just, hey, we need to be more physical in front of the net right now. Hey, we're in a losing streak. We're trying to kickstart the offense. There's a million different, like, answer non-answers that you could give us that aren't this standoffish, that aren't this sort of closed off. And listen, this is the way Peter Laviolette operates, so I'm not surprised that this is the way he's operating. But in this, but while doing this, when you do this as a head coach and you refuse, you sort of make a joke of the question, right? Mm-hmm. And the idea that Nashville Predators fans want to know why Kyle Turris, the third highest paid skater on the team, offensive player on the team, is on the bench right now when Victor Arvidsson is out on the shelf for over a month is not some irrational question that the fans want to know about. The fans want to know about this for all the right and real reasons. And so the media asks the questions, and you sort of make a mockery of that situation. That's fine. If you're going to do that and you're the head coach, that's your prerogative. But when you do that, just know what happens. What happens is then we are left to speculate. We are left to have conspiracy theories. We are left to sit up here and try to guess because you're not giving us anything. So when we sit up here and guess, you know what I start guessing? I start guessing, does David Poile and Peter Laviolette see eye to eye on Kyle Turris? That's the question that comes to my mind. Does the coach and the GM agree on the player? And if because the coach doesn't play the player right now, which I'm left to believe means he doesn't think he helps his team win, and which happened last year as a healthy scratch. So it's not like this is just a one-game thing. It's happened last year. Now it's happened this year for multiple games. David Poile is the one who also deserves some blame in this because he gave him a huge contract. He gave him the $6 million a year contract. So there is blame for David Poile here, the guy who can do no wrong. He deserves some blame for this. Is, you know, why did you give Kyle Turris a massive contract if you thought this was going to be a possibility? If Peter Laviolette didn't like the way he fit into his offense or his system, why did you give him a $36 million contract? This is what you're left giving us. If you're not going to give us a single answer and you're going to kind of make a mockery of the questions, which again is your prerogative as a head coach, then you're leaving us to sort of guess and speculate and sit here and go, you know, like Lavi clearly doesn't like him in the lineup. Poile clearly likes him enough to pay him a ton of money. Where's the disconnect here?
Well, they liked him enough when they paid him. I think everyone was on board when he got paid.
How do we know that Peter Laviolette was always on board?
But because I'm pretty sure that if Lavi didn't think, you know, that Kyle Turris could help this hockey team, I don't think Peter would have then forced the deal anyway.
This feels like Lavi's forcing Poile's hand to trade him, does it not?
It could be. That's why I believe that when the deal was done, everyone was on board. Okay, Kyle, he's coming from another team. He's playing well. This is what we need. Everybody's on board. He's a scorer, yada, yada, yada. Sign up to the deal. You know, it's not going to hurt us that much. So they did it. So everyone was on board. But I think now, you know, Lavi's thinking this guy can't help us. And whether Poile, you know, believes that or not, well, we will see. In a little while. We will see in some weeks or so, because the trade rumors will come up and the deadline will get closer and closer, and either Kyle Turris is here or Kyle Turris is gone. That's basically what it is. It's black or white to me. You can keep him out of the lineup all you want to, but if Lavi doesn't trade him, meaning Poile doesn't trade him, then Poile doesn't trade him.
I think David Poile is going to try to trade him with every ounce and fiber of his being.
I don't know
who's going to take the contract.
Which is
the same problem we had last year at the deadline and the same problem we had in the offseason. But in my opinion, Peter Laviolette's making it worse. Again, it's his prerogative to answer those questions the way he wants to. If he wants to be, you know, kind of a smartass about it, then fine. Be a smartass about it. That's your prerogative. But if there's really an actual reason why he's on the bench and you still want him to be part of your team, then just tell us that. Just explain it. Kyle Turris makes $6 million. His ego is going to be fine.
This is what irks me about, you know, teams, sometimes about team sports. Because we want the player to be team, and do everything the way it's supposed to go. But then the coaches, you know, they have the leeway to say and do certain things that players just can't do.
Right. Like,
you know,
like bench a guy and then ignore the questions.
Listen, it's not fair to a player when, if it's dealing with injury or if it's dealing with trade, when you bench him, you come back and say nothing. And then the player don't want to say anything because
everything he says is exactly. Any word he says, he's going to get himself in trouble.
Absolutely.
He can't say a single thing about
just,
it.
if you don't want me here, just say you don't want me here. We're going to try to, you know, it is what it
well,
is.
Well, they can't do that either because then
what I'm saying is this.
That undercuts his
just
trade
say
value.
He's not playing well. He's not giving us what we want.
Right.
And then go from there or allow the player to say what he's going to say.
Yeah.
One or the other. But you can't play coy and then, you know, if the player says something, get upset with him.
There's two very different discussions here. And we'll continue this a little bit later on. In fact, we're going to ask Floyd Reese about it as well. But there are two very different discussions going on. One is, does Daniel Carr help you win games tonight more than Kyle Turris? And that's a fair discussion. That's a discussion that Peter Laviolette has with his coaching staff and can make the decision on. And last night, he made the decision to go with Daniel Carr. And it worked.
Yeah.
It worked. So that's one discussion. I'm not necessarily even questioning his decision not to play Turris. I'm questioning his handling of the situation. Because then there's another discussion here, which is, how should you be handling this situation? They're two very different conversations. Mm-hmm. And until either he is traded or back in the lineup, these are going to still come. Like, he's going to have to deal with this every time. Vegas is going to come up. Oh, morning skate. They're going to ask questions about this. And it's going to keep coming until there's a resolution. I'm assuming part of the resolution will be trying to trade Kyle Turris. The question is, what is he worth, if anything, right now on the open market? Can you dump the salary? Are you going to offer to pay some of the salary if you trade him? I don't know, but there probably needs to be a resolution because I'm not sure it's healthy for anyone for this to continue the way it is. We'll ask Floyd Reese how he would handle it. We'll do that when we come back. Off and running here, Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Kyle Turris on the bench. Preds win last night. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Marquise Munson. Floyd Reese joining us here, our resident general manager, and of course a host of, is it SpongeBob? And have we actually told Floyd Reese about the new name for his show, Derek? I don't think we have.
Floyd,
have we told you? You know that we rename your show like every 6 weeks on Morning Drive.
And I didn't know that. But what do you got this week?
Thanks for listening, Floyd. I will say this: we started calling you because Derek started calling Jared SpongeBob.
Yeah.
And so that makes you Mr. Krabs. I don't know if you watch the show or not.
I guess it could be worse.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Hey, he's the boss, and you know he owns the Krusty Krab. So
exactly.
SpongeBob and Mr. Krabs from 2 to 6 right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Floyd, Kyle Turris is on the bench. He's a healthy scratch. He's the third highest paid player on the team. Peter Laviolette is refusing to answer questions about it. The fans deserve answers. Daniel Carr clearly helped them win a game last night. Can you remember a situation in your experience as a GM where you either had signed a player and the coach didn't like that player or wasn't using him to win and the fans wanted to know? Like, have you seen a situation like this, and how do you resolve it?
You know, I'm not sure that I have. I would imagine if I sat down and thought about it, there's been, because I've messed up plenty, as we all know. but I'll say this. I think, it's more difficult in the NHL because of the contracts. You know, that's the issue. And you're paying them $6 million a year for the next, I don't know, 5 years, 4 years, whatever it is. And so you're trying to fight that battle. Can you trade him? Can you do something with him? Probably not without it costing you. So it's not an ideal situation.
Now, Floyd, I was watching and this kind of ties into, well, it does ties into the Tennessee Titans and what they're going to do as far as their quarterback, because I think at this point in time, Ryan Tannehill has proven up until now that he can potentially be the answer for this team, at least for, you know, 2-3 years. But I'm watching the Baltimore game. And I'm watching how they're using a quarterback that many didn't think could play at this level. And they're using him in such a way that hasn't been done since probably Michael Vick. They catered the offense around him. And do you think, because I'm looking at Marcus, and do I think Marcus' career is done? No, I think he will go somewhere else, be a starter somewhere else. But do you think that was the mistake, that they didn't cater the offense to his skill set rather than saying, hey, listen, this is our offense and you're going to fit a round peg into a square hole? I just think there could have been more to Marcus that we never will see. And then you look at Baltimore, you see what they're doing. And right now, I mean, Lamar Jackson is the best player in football.
Well, I would agree with you. I think they have done, and the most important thing they've done is they've catered that offense to him. You know, they decided last year he was going to be the guy. You know, I still hold on to the fact that he's not as traditional as, you know, the traditional NFL pocket quarterback. But his skill set is so off the charts that, you know, they decided that, no, we're going to, instead of trying to make him fit us, we're going to fit him. And they've done a great job of that. You know, a guy like Ingram comes in there and bangs it and gains his yards and does what he wants. That allows Lamar to run whenever it's there, run all the read options and do all the things that they do. And, you know, when he throws it, it's all kind of contained. You know, it's not your traditional passing system, but it works for them. And, you know, last night he threw, what, 5 TDs, I think, or something. So, you know, all of them are kind of, you know, underneath crossing patterns right in front of him. Boom, the ball comes out. He puts it on them, and they're off and running. But I think that's truly what they've done an outstanding job of. And really, you know, if you listen to him talk, I guess they kind of spent the whole off season putting this thing together. Okay, what can we do that will work and help us, and also, you know, take advantage of his special skill set.
Floyd Reese joining us here.
Now, do you think that's something they should have done with Marcus? Looking back on hindsight, that's something they should have done with Marcus.
You know, I wonder what that was.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's kind of my question. I don't know. I mean, I'm not convinced he could have run with the ball as much as Lamar without getting hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So you say, okay, well, we don't want to run that risk. Then what is it? Is it pocket passing? Is it constant rollouts? Is it, and I don't know. I don't, and it's hard for all of us, I think, from the standpoint that we all like and respect Marcus so much. And so you're kind of careful about everything you say, because it sounds like you're taking a hit on him, and I don't want to do that. But I'm not sure, you know, I didn't ever get the impression he was a great rollout passer. I didn't get the impression he was a great pocket passer. You know, I think he lacks some anticipation and lacks some decision-making and some accuracy, and all those things become a problem. So then you say, okay, well, what is it that caters to him? And instead of trying to do that, if in fact they could have done it, I think they went the other way and they said, okay, let's try to build up the personnel around him. You know, try to get him a running game, try to get him receivers, try to, you know, get the tight end back into the game and all of those things that would help. And I'm not sure it really did help, you know, but I think that's what they were thinking.
Well, and by the Broncos game, his confidence mentally was completely shot, and maybe his body was physically broken for over a year. Who knows about that? Floyd Reese joining us here, Jared Stoneman's babysitter from 2 to 6 p.m. right here on 102.5 The Game. Floyd, how do you avoid, as a GM, because we're looking at Tannehill and Henry, and I'm already getting questions, who do you sign, Tannehill or Henry? Tannehill or Henry? How do you avoid, because right now Ryan Tannehill is the highest-rated starting quarterback in the NFL based on his 5 games. We know that's not the player that he is. You and I have always agreed on this. He didn't just fall out of the sky into the Titans' locker room. He has 7 or 8 years worth of data that GMs and scouts will study. How do you avoid paying a player based on the most recent 7 or 8 or 10 game stretch that also happens to be one of the best stretches of football he's ever played in his career? How do you avoid overpaying for that?
Yeah, it's scary. And we went through this way back when. D-Mace will remember this, with a kid named Billy Volek,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, Billy came in and for a, I don't know, whatever it was, 7, 8, 9 game span, set, you know, just about every NFL record there was for that time. Completions, TDs, on and on and on. And you know, we made the decision at the end of it all to not re-sign him, and he ended up going to San Diego and was a backup for a number of years. And so it's difficult, because what you're balancing out is, okay, he's changed systems, he's changed cities, he's had time to sit and watch and analyze and maybe figure out what exactly he can do and do well. Is that the advantage we're seeing here? You know, is he better in our system than he was in Miami? And I think you have to take all that in consideration, because, like you said, the worst thing you can do is you know, you got two options. You let him go, maybe the worst thing you could do. You go ahead and sign him to a big long-term contract or semi-long-term contract, and you're stuck with that, and you end up with what you saw in Miami. So it is not easy. I don't envy them at all. You know, and that being said, I mean, it's hard to imagine that, you know, if he can continue. I mean, if in fact he wins a few more and, you know, you end up in the playoffs and all of those good things, then where are you? Now what do you do? I mean, it really gets difficult.
Yeah, price keeps going up. Let's say the money is basically even. Let's say you get a deal, right, where you're happy as the general manager with the money for Tannehill and the money for Derrick Henry, but you can only pick one. Which one are you re-signing?
Oh, wow. I don't, you know, I guess you'd have to go with a quarterback just simply because he's a quarterback. But, I mean, you can't take away anything that Derrick has done and what he means to this team. I mean, Derrick, in my opinion, similar to Eddie, you know, he has more value to us than a bunch of other teams, because he is not, you know, your all-purpose running back. He's not a three-down kind of guy. And consequently, you're saying, okay, well, how much do you want to pay for a runner? Well, to us, we're willing to pay a bunch, because it's really, really important to our offense and what we're doing. And I think he probably carries a little bit more weight with us than maybe with some teams, even though you can just look at him and see what the advantages are. You know, maybe similar to Ingram, what he is for Baltimore. You know, that kind of guy that is going to go into a game and he's going to get you 70, 80, 900 yards, you know, every week, and every once in a while have that week where he blows it up. And for some teams, that's really good and they can appreciate it. But others, I think they're saying, well, what about third down? And what are we going to do with him then? And that's the decision everybody has to make. And the truth is, you know, we could end up, God forbid, end up in a real bind if, you know, again, God forbid, what happens if something happens to Derrick? You know, where does your running game go? I mean, right now it's gone. You know, you're done. And so, you know, you don't have that backup guy even that you can say, okay, this is Ingram, this is a similar type guy that can go in and do those things, because I don't see, now maybe he's there and I just don't see him, but I don't see that guy on the roster.
No, I don't think Kari Blossom game is the answer. Floyd Reese, thank you so much for your time, man. Always a pleasure. We'll be listening. Thanks, dude.
Thanks, guys.
Yep.
Floyd Reese, host of Jared and the GM, 2 to 6 p.m.
SpongeBob, SquarePants.
Mr. Krabs.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he doesn't mind Mr. Krabs.
I don't think he does at all. I don't think much of anything in the world bothers Floyd.
No. I mean, if you called him Squidward or Patrick, that may have been a little disrespectful. But
Patrick,
you know,
is real disrespectful.
Yeah, don't call him
Patrick. Don't call him Patrick. It's
but you know what, though? Patrick has, like, the best life of all of them.
He does.
Patrick just rolls along through life and doesn't have a care in the world, man.
And Floyd's only Mr. Krabs based off of he's hanging out with SpongeBob and money.
Exactly.
He's not greedy.
He's the boss.
He's the boss of the show. Yeah, he's not greedy like Mr. Krabs.
Yeah,
he does, you know, he's money, and he just knows SpongeBob.
So did you grow up on SpongeBob, Marquise? Because you're a little
first,
bit.
I was like a.
So it
I
came out
say
in your
I
sweet
was
spot?
Like 10 when that show came out. I was like 10, 9, 10 years old.
Uh-huh. Interesting. I guess I would have thought you would. I thought you would have been too old for it to.
No,
he was
when
right
show,
cause SpongeBob,
I was a kid.
Yeah, because SpongeBob is really. It's an adult. It's both an adult and a kid's cartoon because it has some adult humor to it.
Yeah, and my only experience is like with a 2-year-old. So I thought, you know, Marquise at almost 30.
No, I've watched it. I sat down and watch it.
Yeah, that was one of the shows that I got to catch at the beginning, tail end of the
beginning.
Yeah, when
the graphics were horrible.
Yeah. It was bad.
They were pretty awful.
You ever notice that on animated shows, the first season is always just atrocious?
Yeah.
Because like some guy just drew it in his basement somewhere.
Just drop it in a water.
And then like it turns into a professional production
like,
quality.
Like, we'll put some money in this show.
Yeah.
So this is actually pretty funny.
Like South Park first season looks totally different than all the other seasons. Simpsons, like all these animated
shows.
They all look so different now
compared to what they did.
Yeah.
Back then,
even Family Guy.
But I do want to discuss the whole Tannehill.
So,
and even Marcus, because we never really touched on. Because I'm watching Lamar, and we never really touched on what Marcus could have been, because his days are over.
Yeah, he's not going to be a Titan at the end of the season. There's no question. And so the two-part conversation is what Marcus could have been, but also you cannot, and we'll discuss this when we return, you cannot pay Ryan Tannehill market rate for what he is giving you right now this second. I know it feels like you want to, but you cannot do that. We'll explain and we'll discuss what could Marcus have been had they done what the Ravens are doing with Lamar Jackson, because if you watched last night, your jaw was probably just open the entire time watching every single drive end in a touchdown for the Ravens last night against the team that won the NFC last year. We'll do all of that when we return. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesale Link studio powered by RumbleOn.com. We've had a lot of controversial topics. Kyle Turris, Ryan Tannehill's contract. What could Mark? Anytime you mention the phrase Marcus Mariota in this city, it feels like it's controversial. Of course, we will have a little bit lighter-hearted conversation coming up next hour. We'll talk with Josh Ward, talk a little Vols as we are on a holiday, of course, on Thursday and Friday. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. But Josh Ward's going to join us a little earlier this week to talk a little Vols as they get bowl eligible. So we'll talk with him. But also Rob Gronkowski. I would like to have a conversation with Nashville people, sports fans. Are they interested? Do they care about Rob Gronkowski? And what is it about him that's interesting to people? I want to get into a sort of a fun conversation about Rob Gronkowski coming up in a few minutes. But to your point, Lamar Jackson was absolutely fantastic last night for the Ravens as they torched the Los Angeles Rams, who looked like a shell of themselves from last year. And Baltimore is basically unstoppable right now. And the two questions we wanted to ask here, number one is, could they have catered? I guess is your question, Derek. Could they have? Could the Titans have done more? Because the Ravens are all in on catering to Lamar Jackson. And one of the biggest stories about Lamar Jackson is that you have to cater as an offense, as a system, as an organization. Everything has to be catered to him for him to be successful and for that system to work. I'm watching like triple option football last night. There's a wing T with like three backs and I love that stuff, but it's definitely new. NFL defensive players are like, what is this? They don't know what it is. Did the Titans do enough to cater to Marcus Mariota's skill set? Did they put him in a position to succeed?
I don't know. And I am, after the game went off, I am I'm watching, you know, the post-game stuff. And what's the show they have on ESPN? What's his name? I forget his
name. Scott Van Pelt?
Yeah, Van Pelt. Van Pelt's on. And he has Ryan Clark and someone else I can't remember right now. On, and he asks Ryan Clark, you know, they're going back and forth, and Ryan Clark makes an interesting comment. He says, you know, when dealing with Lamar Jackson, you know, I think it's 50-50. I think it's half what Lamar can do and his ability to be a professional and go out there and want to get better.
He's a special talent.
Yeah. He wants to be a quarterback in this league. He wants to be the best quarterback in this league. And then the other part is ego. The coaches that have won Super Bowls in that building, one way, decided to put their ego aside and say, you know what? I know we won a Super Bowl doing it this way. The GM, I know we won two Super Bowls doing it this way. But we're going to put our egos aside and win and try to win a Super Bowl a different way,
totally
not the conventional way.
Yeah.
We have a special talent. And the story coming out of Baltimore is when they drafted Lamar, Harbaugh came in and said, listen, let's stop looking for that next guy. Let's draft this guy and make him the new NFL, basically. He can be the new NFL. So what happens? Greg Roman, they travel around the U.S., college, everywhere, to figure out this offense and to learn about an offense that can cater to what Lamar Jackson does. They do their due diligence. They are committed to making this kid the best he can possibly be. What have I always said? Offensive coordinator's job is to put guys in positions to succeed.
Yeah.
That's what you are there for.
Dude, they're running trap option, inverted wing T pistol trap options last night. And I'm going, these defenders have never seen this stuff before.
They are doing things that the NFL hadn't seen from a
in 30 years.
A lineup. Now, we look at Bill Belichick and the things he does.
Sure.
They're doing it on a Bill Belichick level, but a different way. Because they're making you cover every inch of the field. And as I'm watching that, I'm amazed and I am not baffled, but I'm just like, man, that's what you call coaching. Because they didn't try to fit Lamar Jackson into what they wanted him to be. They took an offense and basically said, we're going to make this offense fit him.
Well, as an organizational, exactly.
As an organization, we all decided to do this.
Well, and don't tell me you didn't. If you know anything about college football and you've watched Mark Andrews play at Oklahoma, you knew Mark Andrews was going to be a good player. That guy's an extraordinary talent, but he fits that system perfectly. Mm. Mark Ingram fits that system perfectly, and then the threat of Lamar Jackson's ability is what lets all of it all work.
Absolutely, and I'm just trying to figure out. I don't know if this is the answer or not, but I'm trying to figure out. Did they do the wrong thing with Marcus? And did they say that by drafting him, say, you know what? There are some things that he does well. Marcus throws in between the hashes well. The read option he does well. Right. Getting the ball out of his hands very quickly. That's something that
can run.
At beginning of his career, he did well in college. He can run. We're not going to do all of that. That's not what we're going to do. We're going to do something totally different.
Which Wisenhunt's like,
yeah, Wisenhunt,
180
yeah.
from a spread offense.
Maybe they did not. They did Marcus an injustice. They did not. If you're going to draft a guy first or second overall, you then have to say, what do we need to do to make you work?
Like if you drafted Lamar Jackson and put him into the Patriots system where you're going to ask him to throw the ball 35 times
from
the pocket in 2 seconds like Brady does, it's not going to work.
No.
But again, I'm watching literally Paul Johnson, the former coach at Georgia Tech, guy who runs a triple option in the ACC for a decade. Some of it to a pretty – I mean, he won a couple of ACC titles. He's tweeting last night about how, you know – God, it's good to see my offense being in the NFL for the first time in 20. No one's run the offense that they're running, and that means they have committed to his skill set. And
you know why? Because Greg Roman and that staff did their due diligence and said, you know what? We're going to go around and talk to everybody because we're going to make this kid successful.
And they brought in players that fit what they needed to do. They drafted Marquise Brown. I mean, all these things. They did all this stuff in this offseason to sort of cater to that particular style, and Greg Roman gets a lot of credit here. It's a mystery with the Titans. I don't think you're ever going to know. I think, again, this is not an excuse making session for Marcus Mariota.
I was just wondering.
But I think it's fair to, I mean, listen, this coordinator system coaching change thing, it has to have an effect on you. Mm-hmm. There's no way you can have three head football coaches and five coordinators and run four different schemes, whatever it is, and maybe none of them are really truly advanced enough to cater to your skill set perfectly. I think that's perfect. That's totally fine. I think, like you gave Lamar credit for what they're doing, Marcus also has to take blame for not developing. And I will say this. I think that this is still coming up. I don't think anyone can defend the decision. Like, Ryan Tannehill is clearly better right now. It's not even close. Yeah, yeah. Like, the offense runs.
That's not even the
question. It's
not
even a debate. Yeah. But don't tell me that Marcus wasn't a positive member of the team in 2015, 2016, and 2017. You can't tell me that he wasn't an upgrade on previous situations, that he didn't help the team win, the greatest increase in win total in franchise history from 2 to 9. He gets a playoff win out of the deal. The numbers were good the first 2 years. Like, you can't argue. Like, people are saying, oh, the quarterback's been holding them back for 4 years. No, the quarterback was holding them back the last 2 years, and I'm okay with that. The first 3 years, he was an asset because John Robinson had a terrible roster when he got here, and he's been rebuilding the roster ever since. But did he rebuild the system for the guy he had? Maybe not. And we're never going to know the answer to that because Marcus is done here. We're never going to know the answer, but I think it is a fair question because you're watching in Baltimore right now, and who knows if it works. Mm-hmm. It didn't work in the playoffs last year, but they didn't have all these other pieces, right? It's very different today. Right now they look unstoppable. The Patriots can't stop them. Right now they look like the team to beat in the AFC. And they're scoring on literally every possession. I think there was – hadn't they scored on like 12 consecutive possessions?
Yeah.
Like over two games?
They
– like they're unstoppable.
Six for six at one point this past game in the red zone. And they're averaging over 30 points a game. And it's just unbelievable what they're able to do this year in Baltimore. Yeah. They weren't able to do it last year because Greg Roman wasn't the offensive coordinator, and they didn't cater that. They were trying to do things, small things to cater toward him. This offseason, they were dedicated to finding an offense to cater toward him.
And whether it's Ryan Tannehill or Marcus Mariota or some guy they draft or somebody else,
they're going to have to do that.
The strategy is still a smart strategy. Cater everything you want and everything you have around the guy who's going to touch the ball on every single play. Exactly. It's not overly complicated. Are you interested in Rob Gronkowski? He had some interesting things to say over the weekend. I'd like to know what you guys think. We'll take some calls. We'll talk a little Rob Gronkowski when we return right here on Morning Drive.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.